When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, darlings all, and welcome to this Monkey Kingdom and Acast production of Tom Reed Wilson Has Words With. My guest today could not be more apropos to round off series 3 of Words With, since she's the wizard of words, the empress of etymology, Susie Dent. Etymology, incidentally, is the study of the origin of words, not to be confused with entomology, the study of insects from entomos, the Greek for cut in pieces, as many insects' exteriors appear to have been. Indeed, insects is in sections too. Anyhow, I've been busy authoring some rhyming couplets to honour our lexical legend this week. Here they come. For nigh on 3 decades she's been on TV, Rula Lenska, the first one to flank her. And for her fingering her OED, we must repeatedly thank her. The first words she uttered were, "I'll do my best," and she to that promise was true. For now, erstwhile taciturn souls are obsessed with all of this word ballyhoo. Under the radar, she says she prefers, so what incomparable luck. But nevertheless, for the word connoisseurs, she says, roll 'em, who gives a fig? A linguistic magpie, a great logophile, is how she describes her condition. And so I'm bowled over that she'll stay a while for this marked podcast edition. In fact, for a podcast on words, you could say she is a guest heaven sent. To close series 3 in the most special way, it's dear, wondrous Susie Dent.
Oh, that was amazing. Hello, Tom. Thank you. You've got ballyhoo in there. One of my favourite words.
Oh, I love it too. I always think of the hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway.
It's brilliant. And you just said that I'm always fingering the OED. I'm not sure about that verb, but I have just opened ballyhoo now in the OED because I have it online all the time. And it was at a carnival, a showman's touting speech. Or a performance advertising a show.
Oh, I say. Well, how fitting it was. It was so popularized by that Broadway tune then.
Exactly. So I guess it was, yeah, it was originally US and it stayed there. So then it became bombastic nonsense, extravagant or brash publicity or a noisy fuss. It's a brilliant.
Oh, gorgeous. Well, this is why you're here, Susie, because you are my lexical hero. And usually on this show, we talk about words sort of through the prism of the biography of the guest.
Yeah.
But because with you, it's such a rich tapestry, I thought instead we'd orbit your fabulous, fabulous new book that I've taken to bed every night, Word Perfect. Oh. So the first category from that book is our listeners' favorite word group, the portmanteau.
Yes.
Now, could you tell me first about the connection between portmanteau words and that most elegant old travelling case?
Yes. So it was Lewis Carroll who came up with this idea that words can fold together a little bit like the two sides, as you say, of a travelling suitcase, a portmanteau. And Carroll was just brilliant at them. So he gave us chortle.
That was on my list.
It's just brilliant. So chuckle and snort. He gave us galumph. I mean, I think galumph to me sounds like the sort of thing I would do in the morning to the kettle. I would galumph. I would walk very slowly, or another word for it is trampoosing, kind of trudging to the kettle. But he used it for galloping triumphantly.
Oh, I love that. Apropos chortling, Aisha knows one of her most difficult jobs is trimming my chortles out of this, because I'm a heavy snorter when I chuckle.
Oh, well, there you go. It's just such a good word. And and he came up with it. And then we keep inventing new ones. And some of them go in the dictionary. Not all of them do. But things like hangry famously has gone in.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I really suffer from, if I've not eaten, I do get a little bit bad tempered. I don't know if I eat on.
Yes, me too. One of the new ones that I adore that's in your book. In fact, there are two in your book, at least two. But testiculate, I adore.
Yes. It was Rick Wakeman, the brilliant Rick Wakeman, who actually introduced me to this one. And I don't know if he coined it or whether he picked it up, but Rick is just the most amazing raconteur. And he told me about testiculating, which is basically gesticulating or waving your hands in the air whilst talking bollocks.
Quite a lot of that recently, hasn't there?
I would say so.
Brought on by, and here's another one, the Corona coaster.
Yes, the Corona coaster. So that was one of the few kind of light-hearted words that appeared last year. It was a weird time, wasn't it? Because suddenly we all had to be really conversant in our numbers and, you know, quite a lot of epidemiological vocabulary. It was very strange. And there was a Corona coaster. There was the clap hazard, which I quite like. And a clap hazard was somebody who stood far too close to you whilst clapping the NHS.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, that's quite a good one. And then there was the COVIDiot. I think COVIDiot actually went into the dictionary. So that one was used a lot and still is, I think.
And so they sort of do that through sort of amassing the number of usages through texts and emails and all kinds of things.
Yes. So they have these things which they just go by really off-putting word, which is corpora. So that's the plural of corpus, a corpus being a body. And what dictionary makers use are these bodies, these databases of current language. So they will look to see how often a word is used, in what context it's used, what the register is, you know, whether it's derogatory or whether it's polite or whatever. They will use it, they will look at collocations, which are the words that it's used most often with. And into these databases are fed, you know, everything from scholarly journals to tabloid newspapers to transcripts of conversations on the street. I mean, they're the most incredibly exciting things, and which is why I hate the fact that in lexicography, and that's a mouthful and a half itself, how quite a lot of our terminology is actually really off-putting. Well, actually, they're just so amazing.
Yes, yes. Well, I love the two that I put in the poem that you open your book with, the linguistic magpie and the logophile, because they are so sort of all-embracing.
Yeah, definitely the magpie. I think the magpie gets a really hard rap, and I was one of those people who used to salute and wave and say, "Hello, Mr. Magpie, how are you? How's your family?"
Yes, me too.
I just thought, right, this is enough. This is ridiculous. It's when I had my daughter, I think, and I just thought, what example am I setting her by doing these mad things in the car? So I stopped, and now I just think they're the most beautiful, beautiful creatures. And I'm not sure, I think maybe science has proved that they don't actually go around picking up as many shiny trinkets as we think they do. But I just love the idea and the metaphor of just swooping on a word that takes your fancy and kind of squirreling it away. So I'm using a mixed metaphor here, but kind of hiding it away and then going back to sort of savour it and pick it over. I love that idea.
Well, I've been a veritable magpie in the sex and the body words in WordPerfect.
Okay, I wonder where you're going there.
Because I'm afraid that my grey cells are a bit smutty.
Yeah.
So arse ropes.
Arse ropes are just brilliant. So the history of kind of taboo words is just so fascinating. And swearing, or so-called bad language, strong language, has become a real subject of both medical research, but also academic research. And so there's just been so much kind of detective work gone into our shifting squeamishness over the centuries. And in kind of, I'm just going to look to see exactly when the first record of Arse Ropes was. But this was a time when the C word, for example, would be, which is the biggest offender of the lot, let's face it, for us at the moment.
Yeah.
That would be freely used in anatomy manuals as just such a direct gynecological reference point. And yeah, so Arse Ropes actually is first mentioned in the translation of the Bible in 1382. And it talks about arse ropes that came out of him stinking. And it actually, arse ropes, which is simply another word for the intestines. So if you have grumbling in your arse ropes, you were feeling a little bit bilious. But I just love it. I just think it's such a brilliant expression.
Well, you know, it makes me think of the rectum too, because rectum is a contraction of rectum intestinus.
Yeah.
Just the straight bit. And it's funny how the arse was all kind of linked to the guts. And now we think of them as two kind of isolated pieces of the body.
Well, and also there's the kind of, I don't know how far we want to go with this, but the sphincter is related to the sphinx, because the sphinx was famously the strangler, and it's all about a contracting muscle, something that really binds tightly.
Oh,
So that's got an etymology and a half as well.
Oh, and then the other side of the guts, there was a word I adored in WordPerfect, which I think was just mentioned incidentally, but I loved it. Ventripotent.
Oh, yes. Yes, that just means you're big-bellied. So I can just imagine, you know, kind of patting your tummy and just saying, yes, I'm not sure if it's ventripotent or ventripotent. I think ventripotent is a bit more transparent, but yeah, it just means powerfully bellied. So it's turning a sort of possible unsightliness into something to be proud of.
Because I love ventriloquism because of the notion of a kind of a, like a big bagpipe and bypassing the voice box to create that illusion. I love that.
Yeah, and that was because people were thought to be possessed by God. So they were thought to be possessed by demons, really. And so a ventriloquist was originally seen to be somebody who was quite deranged and who, because of these demons inside them, spoke from the stomach, and it was the demon who was speaking for them.
Oh, I say. Oh, I love that. I did promise a bit of sex. My favourite word in the whole book. Needs a renaissance, I think. Firky toodling.
I need like that one, Tom. Yes, it's just brilliant, isn't it? So it's kind of variously described in different dictionaries as either foreplay or heavy petting, or just a bit of kind of kissing and caressing. So you can, you know, interpret it as you like, but a bit of firky toodling. And I think it was a slightly jokey Victorian euphemism.
Well, I love it because I think it's much more apropos for my version of foreplay, which is not as elegant as foreplay. It's a bit fumbly. Still very fun, but fumbly. It sounds more fumbly, doesn't it, firky toodling?
Firky toodling. It's the toodle bit kind of, you know, it's the playful element. I think the firky sounds a bit fucky, doesn't it? So I think it's a sort of a bit of a seesaw. It takes you to both extremes. But it's such a brilliant word. I love it.
And once you've done quite a lot of firky toodling, you might join giblets.
Yes, getting married. What a strange thing to join giblets. And I still don't quite understand why it was expressed in that way. But if you look at the lexicon of marriage, it's a little bit cynical. It's a little bit disappointing.
And quite misogynistic, isn't it?
Definitely. There's the whole idea of kind of being bonded or bound in some way. So you've got getting hitched and tying the knot. And it can be, some of that can be interpreted in a nice way, that sort of ribbons will be bound around the wrists of the couple to signify a kind of union. But equally, you've got wedlock, which sounds quite kind of brutal.
Yes, yes.
Honeymoon sounds really beautiful, like the sweetness of a honeymoon. But actually, it seems to have been coined to suggest the waning of the moon, so that it's a lovely period, but that it will ultimately fade away.
Oh, gosh. And the one I hate, apropos misogyny, is matrimony, because it's just sort of a bypass to motherhood.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. It's got matry, as you say. I mean, that it's funny, the mother idea informs so many English words, and some of them are gorgeous, like matrix. So it's sort of behind there. But yes, you're right. Matrimony is yeah, I mean, in some ways it kind of gives you a lot of ammunition for mother-in-law jokes, I suppose. But yeah, you're right. It is quite misogynistic. I mean, gosh, the whole of English is quite misogynistic. Let's face it, particularly slang. You know, women are either sort of whores, blouserbellers, as Francis Gross. Do you know about Francis Gross?
No.
Okay, we have to have a chat about Francis Gross at some point, because at the same time that Samuel Johnson was writing his amazing dictionary that was based on the evidence of the classical authors, so the literary greats were the evidence that he took for his dictionary. Around the same time as he was collecting all of that, working extremely hard, as we know,
yes,
a man called Francis Gross was actually going around the brothels, the taverns, linking up with highwaymen, sex workers, those who were kind of the cut purses, the criminals. And he was collecting their language. And he published something called A Classical Dictionary of the Vulgar Tongue. And it's absolutely fascinating. But you do see through that sort of filter, you see exactly how women were viewed in those days, which was, you know, not particularly pretty.
Oh, my. Now, you're going to have to bear with me for the next group.
Okay.
Because I'm going to whip out a very bad Texan accent, because the next group is contractions. So I'm going to start with howdy.
Oh, excellent. Howdy. That's a shortening of how do you do?
Oh.
It's quite interesting. The words that we still see, I think, as kind of defining, you know, the 70s, the 80s or whatever, actually go back a very long way. So watcher, I'm not sure if you'd hear watcher these days.
My dad says that. He says watch a cock.
There you go, watch a cock.
Watch a cock.
If you had to date that, well, you'd say it was what, 60s, 70s?
Yes, I think I probably would guess that.
Yeah. Well, actually, it starts off as a kind of 16th, 17th century greeting, which is what cheer. And what cheer was a way of asking you, how are you? And your cheer was a substitute for your face. So it goes back to the Greek for cheeks. And it was, how is your countenance? How is your disposition? That was the idea. So watcher was, how are you? And then that gradually morphed to watcher.
Oh, I see.
Goodbye, which I'm sure you were going to come to
yes,
as well. Goodbye is God be with ye, really.
I love that. And the final one on my contraction list is, I think, just a theorized contraction, but I've included it because I so adore the word gossamer.
Gossamer is beautiful. It was funny. We had Julian Clary in Dictionary Corner the other day on Countdown.
Oh.
And he was superb. And gossamer came up as a potential word. And it was the very first word, actually, that we got in the first round of the first game that he was presiding over. And I said, oh, yes, gossamer is that beautiful, filmy-like substance spun by cobwebs in the autumn months. And he said, oh, thanks for explaining it, as they were all stupid. So he had a go at me right from the start in a jokey way.
Oh,
but I love the word gossamer, and it's probably a contraction of goose summer, because it begins to appear in early autumn when the geese were eaten traditionally.
I think that is just charming. I mean, less charming for the geese, but divine.
Yes, very true.
Now, the next category is jobs. And curiously, I've picked two jobs that are sort of obsolete. This one I couldn't resist.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Flatulist.
Flatulist. Yes. So this is somebody who is just a professional windbreaker, I guess. There was Le Petit Main was the name of this particular French performer who was able to do the most amazing kind of musical repertoires through his sphincter. We talked about the sphincter. I think it was because he was able, apparently, if you want the grisly details, he was able apparently to draw up a lot of air through his sphincter and then gradually release it. That was how he did it, apparently.
Was this sort of like a music hall act or almost?
Yeah. So it was, I mean, crowds absolutely loved it, apparently.
Gosh, I mean, can you imagine it on Britain's Got Talent? They would adore it. Just be horrible for the next performer. But...
Yes, pretty horrible. I think the reason I mentioned it in the book is because breaking wind is windy pops, whatever you want to call them, actually lie behind or drift behind quite a few words in English, like feisty, because yeah. Feisty referred to, sounds very rude, but it was a fisting dog was the idea. And it was a little dog that was kept as a kind of overindulged pet, apparently. Nothing to do with the fist, as far as I can work out, and everything to do with the fact that it was quite windy.
Love that. Susie, do you know the My Fair Lady story about Rex Harrison's wind?
No.
Oh, well, apparently he was prone to machine gun volleys of farts. And there was a bit towards the end of the musical when he was on stage with Dame Jules, and he let several fly. The next line was Mrs. Higgins saying, "Oh, Henry, dear, please don't grind your teeth." And then she said all of her subsequent lines took on a double meaning. She had to say, "No, my reverberating friend." And... "So you are a motor bus, all bounce and go." And she said it was an absolute nightmare and it added 20 minutes to the end of the show.
Oh, I didn't know that story. I think it's brilliant. Fizzle is another great one because the kids love this one. To fizzle is to break wind quietly.
Oh, that is perfect.
Yes, to fizzle out.
Swiftly moving on to some... unlikely siblings. So what did G-string knickers have to do with the Stradivarius?
I know, I find this very odd. I think it was just the idea, again, I don't think this has been proven definitively, and that's what I love about etymology, the study of word origins, yeah. Because the work is ongoing. You know, people look at the OED and think, oh, it's a historical dictionary, but no, they've got a wonderful team who are actively working on updating it all the time and adding new things. They just had a release today, actually, a new release. But one theory about the G-string is that it was so thin, it was as thin, the back of it, it's as thin as the G-string on a violin. And you've made me think about thongs there as well, and underwear, because there's a lovely mishearing or slip of the ear that I've always quite liked. If you look at Oxford's databases, the ones I talked about, you can see how people get things wrong. So famously, to all intensive purposes, or we are now trending towards, yes, things, or like a bowl in a china shop, or or two blokes in a supermarket for me 5 years ago said, "Tonight, lads," something like that, "we're going to drink to Bolivia instead of to oblivion," which I love. Another one is going at it hammer and thongs rather than hammer and tongs.
Well, I think that's almost better.
I agree. So much of them are almost better. So many of them, like, you know, that's the whole crux of the matter and that kind of thing.
It makes me think of a sort of a grand piano with an open lid with the hammers hitting the thongs.
But there are so many of those. They're called eggcorns, as you probably know, which comes from mishearing of acorn.
Or malapropisms.
Yeah, and sometimes they are absolutely malapropisms. There's also malaphore, which is... quite a new kid on the block, and a malaphore is a blend of malapropism and metaphor, and that's when you say things like, I'll burn that bridge when I get to it. Or it's not rocket surgery. So again, you can say,
oh, I love it.
They really seduce the brain, those. I mean, you have to kind of think, is that not right? Oh no, it's not right.
One more unlikely sibling, champagne and mushrooms.
Yes, champagne and champignon. It's quite a large family, the Champagne region in France, because it goes back to ancient Greece and the Campus Martius and other places where they would be military training grounds. So campus meant open fields. And the idea is that this is where the Roman soldiers, it's probably Rome actually, sorry, not Greece. The Roman soldiers would go there and train in the summer months. And because the Champagne region in France, this region was full of rolling open land, rolling hills, open land. Yes. That was called Champagne, which is related. A champion, going back to the Roman army, who's somebody who succeeded in battle, that's related as well. University campus, and then champignon, which also are mushrooms which grow on open land. So this is quite a big family.
Oh, it's just heavenly, isn't it? You never know when it's going to take a left turn. It's just incredible.
My favorite pair of siblings, well, I've got so many, but the unlikely ones is mouse and muscle. Do you know this one?
No.
I think in the Roman imagination, I don't know what they were eating or drinking but or smoking, but they thought that when an athlete flexed their biceps, it looked like a little mouse. Yes. Kind of scuttling under the skin, moving about, and muscle goes back to the Latin musculus, meaning little mouse.
Oh gosh, isn't that fascinating?
I love that one.
And actually, you can see all, especially in those very developed muscles, all this kind of strange sinewy movement.
Yeah,
hence rippling muscles.
I discovered the other day, which I had never even contemplated. Do you know what butch is short for? We talked about contractions.
No, no.
So butch is short for butcher's knife. And the idea was of being kind of, a butcher's knife was kind of seen as something that was aggressive and strong and very kind of masculine. It was a very sort of, or it was a bit like a hunter's knife. So the idea was that you would be very strong. And then it got transferred to kind of masculine attributes. Yeah, strange.
Gosh, that is fascinating. My final group here is one of my favorite word groups, the eponym. And I've chosen the first one because one of the much maligned groups historically is left-handed people. I picked Corifisted.
So left-handedness historically has long been viewed as you say, as kind of, well, sinister famously is the Latin for left-handed. Awkward comes from an old Norse or Viking word for the wrong way round, which was seen as being left-handed. Getting out on the wrong side of the bed was seen as getting out on the left-hand side. And then you've got cack-handed, cack being left as well. I mean, so many.
Yeah, and dexterous just means right-handedness, doesn't it?
Exactly. So dexterity is all because, yeah. So the right-handed people have got lots of positive adjectives named after them. As you say, dexterous comes from dexter, the Latin for right. So, and it turns out in Scotland that there are equally, particularly in certain areas, there are lots and lots of adjectives for being left-handed. And Corifisted is said to go back to Ferniehirst Castle in Scotland, which was built by a left-handed laird, and he built his spiral staircases to favour left-handed soldiers so that if they were fighting, they would be able to wield their sword on the right-hand side. And so Corifisted is said to go back to Mr. Kerr.
Ah, who maybe was the great-great-great-grandfather of Deborah Kerr.
Well, maybe Kerr, that's the way, you're right, it was Kerr for her, wasn't it? I'm not sure how to pronounce Kerr. Apologies to Scots everywhere.
Well, maybe she anglicised it. I'm not sure.
Oh.
This next one is for Hitchcock fans. MacGuffin.
Yes. So do you hear this in kind of, you know, in TV terms, because I've never heard anyone in TV talk about MacGuffin, but apparently it's quite famous within film.
No, I've never heard of it before.
It's a kind of classic. I don't know where you stand on Hitchcock, because obviously you read quite a lot about him being very misogynistic and perhaps a not very nice individual. But yes, so the MacGuffin is supposed to be an element on which the plot of the film particularly hinges. I think, yeah, so I think the plot is driven by this particular element, but it actually doesn't mean anything to the audience. It kind of comes in out of the blue. So, for example, in Psycho, for example. So Psycho, absolutely brilliant. There is a sum of $40,000 who is stolen by the main character, Marion Crane, and it becomes the motivation for her every action. But actually, it's never really kind of explained, or it just kind of, it never really goes anywhere. And Hitchcock liked to turn them, I'm reading here from the book, Hitchcock liked to turn them, these plot-driving elements, as MacGuffin. And when asked to explain it, this is what he said, which is so confusing and very Hitchcockian. It might be a Scottish name taken from a story about two men on the train. One man says, well, what is a MacGuffin? You say, it's an apparatus for trapping lions in the Scottish Highlands. Man says, but there are no lions in the Scottish Highlands. Then you say, then that's no MacGuffin.
Oh, I adore that. Well, the last eponym is because of my love of musicals. And it comes from a musical called Of Thee I Sing by the Gershwin Brothers. And nobody knows that musical. But everybody knows, I've got rhythm, I've got music, which is actually from it. And this name, Throttlebottom.
Throttlebottom, I know. And I use this word so much. And, well, Mr. Throttlebottom is apparently a sort of slightly bumbling and inept person in public office. And I chose it because it perfectly describes to me someone not too far away from the political landscape at the moment, who is, yes, who just actually holds quite a lot of power. So I'm not sure if it works perfectly, but the sort of bumblingness of it, I think, is really appealing. And you can just hear that Throttlebottom is just such a clever name.
Oh, I adore it. And I adore you, Susie.
Oh, and we could talk for hours.
I loved it. I loved it. And I'm forever hanging on your lips and learning and loving it.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, let's just do more stuff. I would love that. And yeah, keep teaching us with the words of the day as well. And I will learn stuff from you as well.
Oh, well, I've loved it. And bonjournée and lots of love.
Take care. And yeah, God be with you.
Our bonus word today is ketchup. Susie says she distinctly remembers being fascinated by words from as soon as she could read the back of the ketchup bottle with its many divergent tongues. Ketchup comes from the Chinese word ketsiap, the name of the sauce derived from fermented fish. It's believed that traders brought the fish sauce from Vietnam to southeastern China. Well, that brings us to the end of a magical series. If you've just arrived, then do listen to our other wordy contributors, David Walliams, Dawn French, Michelle Visage, and many, many more. This has been a Monkey Kingdom and Acast production. Until next time, oodles of love.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.